republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Here we have the roll call.
Councilmember Deedy?
Here.
Councilmember Morgan?
Maybe she's gonna be late. She said she's maybe would be late. I don't know.
Okay. Councilmember Edelman?
Here.
Councilmember Weber?
Here.
Councilmember Pepper?
Here.
Okay, it's our work session on attendance plan. Mr. Williamson?
Mayor, thank you, council. This is a follow-up from our original meeting that we had scheduled to introduce this to the council, and the council asked to have work study so that we could go through anything explicitly. Councilmember Morgan asked for the matrix, which we provided to all of you by Friday of last week. And you had that to be able to look for. Tonight I brought with me Alex Campbell, who has helped me do the planning work of this, and Dan Urban will be momentarily, hopefully, coming through the doors. And he is our civil engineer, if there was any engineering questions that you might have about the availability of the utilities or any of those kind of questions. I wasn't quite sure where we were with questions. I think Mr. Weber said he didn't have very many questions, or he'd looked through it, and so we're here to answer if there's any of those questions. So tonight, and then as you move forward, the council's options are to approve, deny, which is always an option, and to send it back for revision. So we have formulated everything for an approval. Staff has made an our findings and facts for approval. Should you find something that you don't like in here for whatever reasons, and you want to go down one of the other paths, we need some time to actually prepare that information for you, just so that's clear. Okay. So with that, if we
could, I
Councilmember Deedy.
So while we're waiting for the other gentleman to get here, Oak Point had given us a letter, so I'd just like to read that into the record, if no objection. Just because it was kind of a confusion on when the city thought that we had to have this voted on and when Oak Point thought. So just want to quickly read this. Oak Point, December 1st, 2017, and it was to Mayor Benson and city council members for the agenda bill 17-067, PLN 170076 for the final plat approval of the villages, MPD 10 Trails Phase 2, plat C-Division 1. So it just says, Dear Mayor Benson and city council members, thank you for your attention last night to the plat 2C Division 1 final plat. I believe the workshop on Monday, December 4th, will help clarify any additional questions you may have and prepare the Black Diamond City Council for possible action on December 7th. During public testimony last night, Megan Nelson distributed a letter from Nancy Rogers of Crane Cross and Hempelman, which indicated an action deadline of December 11th. Unfortunately, Ms. Rogers did not have the benefit of discussions between the MDRT and Oak Point's development team regarding the timeline for the plat 2C-Division 1. Oak Point acknowledges that we previously agreed to the action date to December 28, 2017, as indicated by Mr. Williamson at last night's City Council meeting. I apologize for any confusion the earlier date may have caused, and we will strive to ensure in the future that any similar dates are well vetted before being distributed. Again, thank you for your consideration of the plat 2C-Division 1 final plat, and we look forward to a positive process on December 4th with the anticipation of action on December 7th. Regards, Colin Lund. So I just wanted to get that in so that there is no confusion between the council and the residents on which date we are looking at.
Okay.
I have a question.
This is Councilmember Edelman. It's probably a really generic one. First of all, I guess I want to again say thank you guys, because you've just done a terrific job getting this paperwork done and all of the back and forth, making sure that it's done correctly. But my question has to do with, and it may be even appropriate to PP1A. We've got alleys, we have these woonerfs. We have areas where the HMOs are going to have responsibility for the maintenance, like some of the rain gardens.
HOAs.
Or HOAs. Maybe I want an HMO. But my question is, in some cases it says that the developer will be responsible for like 3 years. Is it the intent then that the HOA then takes over all the responsibilities? And I'm thinking especially alleyways and the woonerf. If it snows again ever in Black Diamond, it'd be their responsibility to make sure that those alleys are cleared of the snow or ice, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, if Oak Point only has a 3-year commitment, then forever the HOA takes over.
Correct.
Then what happens if they're derelict? Do we...
Derelict in snow removal or derelict...
Well, just in general. Just in general, whether it's snow removal or maintenance of... Because I'm assuming at that point they have to maintain the structure of the alleys.
Correct.
So there will come a point in time when there's going to have to be some kind of routine maintenance done on those roads.
Right.
And what happens if they fail to do that? What do we do?
So what would happen in the stormwater, for example, if we had realized or there was a derelict of them doing that? In the development agreement, we have the right to go in. First, we ask the homeowners to participate, the HOA, to get the work done, put them on notice. If they don't do that work, then we have the right as the city to go in there, do that work, place a lien upon those properties.
Okay.
But as far as snow removal, that is clearly an HOA responsibility. And it'll be, we have some privately owned roads in the cities now, and it gets very confusing on why we don't plow those roads. So, and it's pretty clear to the Homeowners Association. And quite frankly, when this gets built out, the Homeowners Association could actually have more staff than we as a city have.
Well, that brings me to another question too, that I was talking with somebody today, and the point was made that a lot of homeowners associations actually pay someone to come in and manage the HOAs. And this is going to be a huge HOA up there.
Right.
And they're going to have a lot of money, I'm sure. So by buying that service from a company, then it might be better than Joe Dokes down the street who doesn't want to pay anymore. And
right. So, I mean, if we look, I'm hopefully you've all gone into the plat, and I'll give most of you tours of it, and you can see the level of care that they're putting into the landscaping and how that's well thought out and stuff like that. This is a long, it's one of the things about the master plan development that are good things. It's a long-term process, and if the roads aren't being plowed, the thing that route that will get out to the others' residents, because eventually residents will stop in and they'll say, because I've been to Holly and talked to those people there, you know, how does it work? That's how it's going to be done. There is a high level of how this project needs to run and function, and so far Oak Point has shown that they're able to do that through the maintenance of the landscaping and keep up a very high level of appearance. So we have no doubt moving forward under the HOA and whatever dues that they'll, that that's the intent, that they will be able to maintain that high level of service.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Pepper.
I'm looking at page 8 of 31 in the document. I'm looking at letter G, which occurs at the top. And I noticed it says an integrated pest management system to limit the use of fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides within 25 feet of the buffer wetlands, and it delineates those, and within 50 feet of the buffer wetland E1, and within 100 feet of the buffer wetland TOS identified. I think there's another place that says, and there are restrictions on other kinds of items, one of them being people washing their cars, and I know that this is not unusual at all, but I wonder, based on the experience that the Villages has had with other developments, how do you go about educating the homeowner and the HOA to have that be sustained over time? Because you have people saying, well, I didn't know. You know, I mean.
Right. So as part of one of our conditions that we put on at building permit, right, at the building permit options, that's where we're working with the developer, Oak Point, to develop a educational brochure. So that brochure will be given to each residence as they purchase those homes from the builders, because at some point now, when these lots move away from Oak Point, they become builders' lots. So when we're issuing the building permit, that'll be one of our conditions, that this educational piece that we're developing currently with the Oak Point people, that that will be given to the builders, which will then share with the homeowners, which we will be also always in contact with the homeowners association, because the build-out takes a number of years in these projects, and we're going to be watching that a number of years. So also keep in mind, as the phosphorus reporting as we continue on down, it goes for, I believe, 5 years after the project is closed out. So we're gonna be monitoring that, and if we're seeing spikes in the phosphorus for one reason or another, we'll be on top of that, and we'll know where that's coming from.
Yeah, okay, I mean, it's one thing to write all these things down, but if it's, you know, if it's, oh, wink, wink, that'll be okay, don't worry about it. I think that that development is so big that the impact of people not trying to observe these things, let's say I'm out there washing my car and putting pesticides on my lawn. The first time we send you a letter, the homeowners association sends you a letter. I mean, what? What kinds of consequences? Fair, you know, like reasonable consequences. Does the homeowner have to engage in? You know, you have to go to like, I don't know, preserve your forest class or something.
So that's the challenge in all cities, and is the code enforcement. You can put the rules out there, but it's the mechanism of how to enforce those things. So that mechanism is going to be on two parties. Actually, it's going to be on three parties: the builder of the homes, the homeowners association, and always the city. We're the steward, no matter what. The developer will go away, the builders will build and move away, or the developer, but we'll always be there. We'll always be that enforcement action that we see people washing their cars. We actually currently now have enforcement that you're not supposed to wash your car in your driveway at your house on Blacktown. You're supposed to do it in your yard, those things. So that's all part of our stormwater NPDES permit. You hear us talk about that in our stormwater regulations. Those all go hand in hand. So those will be the homeowners association, the builders, if they're still there, and the city. You know, will be the enforcement agencies. And like all court enforcement, it's educate first.
Yes.
Right? Educate them, let them understand the sensitivity of the wetlands, the areas, and what they're doing, especially up on 2C. Mm-hmm. You know? So anything that comes off the yard, or there's yard drains, put off the driveways and the roads, at least that goes to a regional stormwater pond. The water that you see that we discharge back in the wetlands, that's clean roof. If we see people up on roofs using moss killers, so we,
right,
you know, don't allow moss killers, galvanization of roof, zinc, all those other things are flatly outright, they cannot do those within up on that project. So we are going to be the enforcement agency.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I'm late.
That's okay.
I underestimated traffic.
Yeah. We all have that problem.
We're just a little closer than you are. Councilmember Pepper?
I liked on preliminary plat condition number 16 when you're talking, is it Wooners?
Wooners.
Yeah. Okay. That you had mentioned that pedestrians have more power in that area,
yeah,
which is why you're stating that there's something about the the walkway, the back has to look as nice as the front,
yep,
and the walkway has to go
four-sided design, yeah,
yep.
Right, and could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So one of the elements that, especially up on 2C, are houses that sit on corners or highly visible things. The one thing that we wanted on the Wooners was those houses front the main road up to 2C, but they're also on the Wooners.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to make sure that that element of design led you to have the experience on the Wooners for something special, and that the element of design on the road still looked nice too. So that's why those are very specific to those lots. And the VUNRF is something that, you know, the Oak Point people brought forward to us, and we've embraced and have worked through it, that it is an empowering thing of the pedestrians. Mm-hmm. You know, there's limited areas for parking there. You're going to park in your house or in your driveway. And that, you know, there is a availability to just walk out and walk within that area. There, I mean, I think the VUNRF area is going to have one of the nicest parks that we've seen, a natural park that led you right to the trail sections. Mm-hmm. The rain garden ideas, the ideas that they've done in those plantings there. People are going to want to go up there and walk around. And, but that's why when we did it, we had a special material. You couldn't just use asphalt, so that people think it's the same part of the road. So when you enter in that, you realize as you're coming in there, because as you enter it, there is a grid pattern that lets you know, hey, something's different here. This is something different. I need to slow down. I need to see what's going on. And then where the pedestrian areas that cross the VUNRF, those are also in a checkered pattern too, so that people understand where you need to cross those for their protection. But it's really the idea that the car is less empowering than the people and the kids on their bikes and people walking in that idea. And the idea was to get people out as part of their community and get them on their front porches and get out talking and be part of a neighborhood.
And road signage would be, you would be going low speed?
You won't even post the speed in those areas there. You wouldn't post a speed in there because essentially it's a very large type of driveway for those individual houses. So my anticipation was not to post the speed limit signs up into the VUNRF.
Okay. Is there any kind of thing saying, well, I guess that will come later.
Yeah.
Signage for watch out for.
Yeah. If there's pedestrian issues, we'll deal with that. We'll. Yeah. I mean, the.
Do you have some examples of, do we have some in the United States?
A VUNRF? Yeah, we have them up in Issaquah. In the Issaquah Highlands has them. And that's where the idea had been embraced. You know, and quite frankly, those houses on the VUNRFs in the Issaquah Highlands are probably the most popular houses and sell the fastest. And if one comes for sales, they're taken because people like that experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we use that word a lot, experience. But that's really what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to make this that you're going into a track house type things. We're trying to build these unique little things within each one of these different divisions that we are building here. You know, this one, quite frankly, 2C is very special. It's gonna have a unique trail system around it. It's gonna have protected wetlands on each side of it. It's gonna have the VUNRF. It's gonna have great parks in it. It's that is a very special island within this development. And that's why, quite frankly, we took a lot of time in the development of that project. That's why it's been very thoughtful in all the hearings. The developer has embraced these ideas, has really proposed a lot of good ideas up there on that project. And that's why that's gonna be some probably one of, in my opinion, I don't know what all the rest of the neighborhoods, but currently, to me, that's gonna be the best, the most special neighborhood up there.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Councilmember Deedy.
Okay, Councilmember Deedy, so I have a couple of questions. Where it says allows the use of green technology such as solar panels. So is there no houses going to be built right now that are going to be solar, using the solar?
Well, we wouldn't know that until the building permits come in. But for example, some of the builders within the Tahali, which is another master plan development, that part of their options that they offer some of their clients is solar panels on the roof. So we're embracing that technology. We want to try to, you know, water-wise, a lot of them, you know, if they're, let's say it's a 55 and over adult type lifestyle home, a lot of those, they'll put the sprinkler systems in there that have the rain gauges, so they automatically shut off, so they don't allow them to continue going during the rain. So those are the technologies that we're trying to embrace and bring forward.
Okay.
You know, especially at the time when you're building new is the time to,
right,
you know, do those things. So.
Okay. And so let's see if I word this right. Okay, so we talked a little bit about HOA. And so what if, because I'm thinking money-wise here.
Mm-hmm.
So what if your HOA is just starting out, got some new people running it, and it's not being enforced? So you've got citizens coming and filing reports at City Hall. And so would the city then say, go back to your HOA, file your complaint there, and then if nothing's done, then come back to the city? And if so, is there then a charge to the HOA because they're being paid, right, to make sure all those rules are being enforced? So does the city then say, you're not enforcing these rules, you're being paid by your homeowners to do so? So would the city then request payment for the time that they're out there trying to solve these issues? So
I don't understand. If it's a stormwater issue, a parking issue, those type of things that prevent police and fire and from us doing our jobs, yes, we're gonna get involved with those. If there are other issues, that's gonna be a civil matter, right? That's gonna be a civil matter between the HOA and that particular resident. Now, if it's a code compliance, like somebody decides they're gonna just let rats go crazy in their house, I couldn't imagine someone would do that, but let's just say they did, and a citizen filed a complaint that there's rats and stuff, we would get involved in here. But again, this is the beauty of the master plan developer. We have a master plan developer to hold accountable for these things as we move forward. So there you have the HOA, and that, if it becomes like that, you know, oh, a discussion about fencing or whatever the issue is, a lot of those the HOA will address. But if the HOA doesn't address them, and they're not life safety issues, and are stormwater, or parking in the alleys, or those type of things, that's gonna become a civil matter. And that's how they're done. That's how all HOAs are resolved.
Okay, so the city would then send them back and say, that's a civil matter, it's not a city matter.
Yes.
That's something you've gotta deal with your HOA.
And
okay.
Contact the master developer, or, well, there's those avenues there. There's the, I think Megan talked with us last week that there's the HOA, there's the commercial HOA, and then there's the oversight board. So there's all different mechanisms for them
different
to resolve. Yeah. And quite frankly, on HOAs that are more active on these things that are gonna be high visible, you know, they have a tendency to deal with these problems. They don't want the problems to continue on. You know, HOA is only as good as their enforcement of the issues. That's why smaller HOAs sometimes don't have the money and or the horsepower. When I mean horsepower, the money to hire attorneys to get these things to enforce them, or the will to place a lien on somebody's property, these HOAs will be large enough that they'll be able to handle that.
Okay, thank you.
So Councilmember Pepper? Oh, are you not done?
Oh, go ahead.
Preliminary plat condition number 27 and 15 of 31.
Oh.
Councilmember Pepper. Preliminary plat condition number 27 on page 15 of 31. Mm-hmm. Could you talk about that a little bit?
So are you...
The 200th dwelling unit?
Sure, on the bridge. Is that what you're referring to? The pedestrian crossway?
Yeah.
Okay, so what was your question?
Well, I'm just wondering, pursuant to the MPD permit condition 32, Prior to issuance of the certificate of occupancy for the Village MPD's 200th dwelling unit. Now, certificate of occupancy means that someone's gonna live in it.
Someone's gonna live there.
And it's gonna live in it.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
The applicant shall comply with Roberts Drive sidewalk and pedestrian connection requirements under section 11.6 of the Village's development agreement as updated by condition 30 of the Black Diamond Hearing Examiner's decision for preliminary plat 1A, mm-hmm. And the number, according numbers, dated December 10th, 2012. This will be to provide a connecting sidewalk and safe pedestrian connection from the frontage improvements along parcel B13 to the northeast corner of, is that Guidetti?
Guidetti's property, yes.
Guidetti,
yes.
I saw, yeah, okay. Parcel along Roberts Drive. So is, could you talk about that a little bit? Is it?
Sure.
I can't. Is it like up there, it's connected to the sidewalks?
Right, so I'm gonna talk real factual, and I hope you won't be offended by what I'm about to say. So when you denied the Roberts Drive sidewalk continuation by council action, not you, the council, when the council did that, you stopped that project. That project was at that point where we're going to take it, cross the Rock Creek, and then go up 100 feet, and then Oak Point was going to attached to it. So that then stopped that project. Then now we've been issued a letter of notice by Oak Point and Nancy Rogers from Crane Cross Hempelman telling us we're in violation of a binding contract, which was the development agreement. So at that point, they put us on notice for future damages and or claims of work of our violation, which will have to be litigated. So at that point, once the city moved away from moving it forward, Oak Point now has moved forward with working towards an engineering equivalence of to have a pedestrian cross of that bridge, to work forward on adding the additional sidewalks that are required now, to do the additional retaining walls that will be required now. So they're moving forward with a scope of work for us to permit, and then they would then build those sections. And according to Ms. Rogers' letter, they'll come back to the city looking for us to pay whatever monies that they believe we owe them.
Okay, so
that's at the 200th, that has to be done, or a financial commitment.
Okay, so the applicant has met the requirements of this condition for the final plat approval?
Yes, because there's not 200, so between
One
and 1A, There is not 200, and they're actively in the process. We've met with them twice. We've met with them on site with their environmental people. And we continue to work through the process of them moving forward to issuing permits. So in our point of view, they're actively pursuing that construction and moving forward with it. So by the 200th, they either have to have it built or a financial commitment to the city.
Just for clarification, the reason that we include these certificate of occupancy thresholds in these final plat staff reports is the city has to track these numbers as they move forward, and the 200th dwelling unit may not be in PP1A or it may not be in 2C, just depending on where the development occurs.
It doesn't have to be by section, it's
correct.
Just by
the overall.
It's by the overall.
Exactly. Okay. So by imposing.
Building out each preliminary plat before you move on to a different one, right?
Well, yes, and remember, PP1A is in 8 divisions. Mm-hmm. So Division 2 of PP1A is nearing completion here, and we'll be bringing that final plat for you. So the council will have continuing these final plats coming forward. So our thought is let's say 2C for some reason isn't as fabulous as I think it is, right? And something else is more fabulous, and they build the units down there before they build them in 2C. That's why we write it that way.
Yeah, and there's tricking language is for not only the builders, but for the city moving forward to be able to say that this condition does apply to this final plat at that time.
Okay, thank you very much, appreciate it.
Councilmember Pepper?
I'm looking at page 19 of 31, and it's preliminary plat condition number 42, and it's about the adjacent activities adjacent to wetland buffers. And my question is,
I'm sorry, what condition was it again,
Councilmember Pepper? Excuse me. It's I'm looking at page 19 of 31, which is a staff comment that relates to preliminary plat condition number 42, which is on page 18, just right before it.
Okay.
And I just want to know, it talks about monitoring, and it says the monitoring report is being finalized by the applicant and will be submitted to the city upon completion by the end of the year. And my question is, is there a monitoring report that goes through each year to check things, or?
Yes.
I asked the question.
Yes.
So I just want to make sure we have the right. So yours is preliminary plat condition 42, which is on page 18.
Right. And then the staff comment is on 19, and it says the applicant has met the requirements of this condition. Nope.
So we are on 42 here. Which is the wetland buffer.
The wetland buffer vegetation management plan.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. So the wetland buffer vegetation management plan, we have Pertit who goes and they meet with wetland resources every year. Jason has been out there, has monitored them for this year also. They make sure that the buffer revegetation plan, we were able to do at the same time. So he'll go out there and monitor those, washing the wetlands to make sure they're not getting too much water or not enough water. Those are actually what we'll do every year. And then we have also part of an ongoing thing is our stormwater prevention plan is, and then Oak Point also has a yearly meeting that with the citizens to do that too.
Okay, and so this monitoring, did I hear you correctly in that it will be done every year and report is given to the city?
Yep, yes.
Okay, thank you.
You can raise your hand.
I have another question, but other people might want to have a turn, so I'm just.
Well, nobody's raising their hand. We're just gonna go and put it up.
Okay.
If you have questions, knock it out.
Okay, I'm looking at page 23 of 31, and it's preliminary plat condition number 67. And I'm reading this and I'm not sure exactly understand what is being said here. And I wonder, it has to do with recreational facilities. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you could clarify that for me.
Okay, so again, we put these triggers in there that have the residential units because we don't know exactly when they'll be triggered. So again, if 2C isn't as fabulous as I think it is and people build in other parts, right? So this condition you'll see in other parts as other plats come forward. So we're just making sure that whoever buys these lots from the developer, that everyone is really clear where these triggers are. So at the 800th dwelling unit in any phase of the villages, the city will not issue certificates of occupancy for more than 799 dwelling units. So what we're doing is we're putting everybody on notice.
Until recreational facilities, okay.
Right.
Yes.
I have that now. Thank you. Okay. I just wondered what it, I didn't quite.
Right.
Okay, so you do this and then the recreation facilities appear. And
now,
then you can continue on.
Mm-hmm. Right, but
okay.
Quite frankly, the developer is in there building out some very large parks right now with bocce mm-hmm. ball courts. I took you by them and the basketball courts, and they're providing their, doesn't say that they have to wait till that occupancy number, but that's kind of our benchmark by city codes and our comp plan that you will have these certain things done by this level. Mm-hmm. So,
thank you.
And just for reference, all these dwelling unit triggers are listed in the development agreement and on sheet 13 of the final plat drawings, there's also a table that has these requirements by ERU or other trigger.
Okay, I'm not sure I connected them.
Oh yeah, just it's kind of a one-stop shop for
like
all those
that
triggers.
That's what we brought forward in our staff report so that you would actually see what they are, because they can get buried and lost in the documents if you don't deal with it every day like we do. It's.
I'm sure.
Councilmember Weber, on page 2431, condition number 74, says the combination of elevation, style, and floor plan for dwelling units or buildings should not be placed beside each other, so on and so forth. Then you get down to the end, it says, on a limited basis, specific locations within neighborhoods may vary from this requirement. Is that the city's call, developer's call, builder's call on on what's considered limited basis and specific within the neighborhood. Just curious.
So the idea when this was done was so that you wouldn't have the same style of house next to each other in the modulation. I think on a limited basis, specific location where neighborhoods may vary from this requirement, would be something that the developer, knowing this, would ask us. There's a certain reason, there's got to be a certain reason or something that's constrictive or something that restricts what they're going to have to be done. And then that is something that we would work between our staff and developer to make sure those are implemented. And, I mean, like, there are just some unique situations that are going to require, you know, some changes, but that's how that would be done.
And I think another situation where you may see this occur, this will happen, again, as Andy said, at the building permit stage, but is in unique areas of the development, like the Boon Earth, where it is a unique experience in that area. So if the builder were inclined to create a similar aesthetic along that area, for example, that might be one situation where we can say, this is a limited basis specific location where we may vary from this requirement based on unique site circumstances.
There's a very popular roundabout up in the Issaquah Black Plateau that when they did that, they wanted it to make it look like the brick colonial type houses over in Boston.
Brownstone.
So they let them do that. And it looks really, really nice.
Right.
So they're actually, so here, if that was a unique element and we're all able to agree that that is something special, then yes, we'd allow that.
It's requested by the developer, approved by the city.
Yep.
And ultimately it would fall to the buyer, you know, if they wanted a house, like their neighbor's house.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
You couldn't remember which house you wouldn't.
Okay, sometimes too, even if you have two houses side by side, one's a reverse floor plan.
Yeah.
Yes.
They'll mirror
each other. So they won't, or there'll be something little quirky here or there that'll make it just a little bit more unique than just.
That modulation, stepping back, moving forward on the lots.
Roof lines and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Councilmember Pepper?
I would like to draw our attention to preliminary plat condition number 77 with the low impact development. And I'm wondering, the term pervious asphalt and pervious pavers is used. And I'm wondering where are the areas where these will be used within these plats? I mean, is there a pattern to them? Or are they?
Sure. You know, we thought pervious asphalt was a great idea when we all went through this. And it is an option that the developer could use or not use. But pervious asphalt, as we understand its life better today, so if you imagine the alleys you saw, we've taken you down the alleys and you've seen them, right? So if that's pervious asphalt, where actually the stormwater would go in and then would absorb into the ground. And now we have the concrete truck coming in, we have the sheetrock truck coming in, we got the lumber truck coming in, we got the builders and we got the mud, they're going to plug. So in conversations with the developer, they ultimately pave those sections and then enhance and enlarge the stormwater pond in the back of the project, which actually infiltrates the water back into the ground. It was just a different way to get the water there. Now, there might be certain areas in the project where we could use pervious pavement. There might be trails or there might be some additional as the project grows out. But currently, there is no pervious pavement in the plat.
And I think another key reason for that is, as you guys mentioned earlier, the Homeowners Association, their maintenance obligations for these, the pervious pavement requires more maintenance typically. So that would be an extra burden on something that we're already questioning, will it get maintained?
But the other things, the reduced roadway widths, done. Yep. Infiltration wells, done. Rain gardens, done. Bios wells, done. Filter ships, done. Reduced driveway lengths and widths have been done. So they've reduced their driveway widths to 18 feet instead of being 20 feet wide. And the petway stations have been installed on all the trails.
Yeah, when we went on that tour, you had talked about the pervious surface and the alleys. And when I saw this in here, I knew that conversation that we had had. And I was wondering if there was a plan to use them in other locations or a pattern of them at some other point. I'm not saying to do this. I'm just saying, is this an option or is this in offing?
I think
we just cross these out?
I think we need to have it there because I think there might be opportunities let's say in the commercial area, if the soils are right, as we learn more about pervious pavement, you have to have the right soils. It has to be an area that we can get the buildings done, do all that, and at the end then pave a section to get that pervious pavement. You know, it's like the Fred Meyer parking lot. It has some pervious pavement in there for them to help control their stormwater. It's going to be a unique, and it's going to be kind of a very thoughtful manner how we're going to use pervious pavement.
Okay, so you would leave this in here?
Absolutely. It's a tool in the toolbox, right?
Maybe the surface improves in the future, and it will last better.
Right, or the spot where we all agree it should be placed, that you can get it done.
I think pertinent to the condition, the language specifically, it references low impact development techniques, so pervious pavement is just one option.
Right.
And as we went through last year, as the city adopted the LID ordinance for the overall city, especially in regards to residential, there are other options, rain gardens, reduced roadway widths, and things like that, that will achieve the same effect. So pervious pavement isn't the only option. I think this is being accomplished in other ways that Andy mentioned.
Yes, I wasn't asking from the standpoint of it has to be.
Well, I want to leave it in there because I want to have that tool in our toolbox if we could be able to use it later on, for sure.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Pepper?
I'm looking at preliminary plat condition number 89. About the sensitive areas, areas and their buffers may be.
Could you speak up?
Just not. Condition number 89, it's about the sensitive areas and the buffers, but it talks about the buffers may be cleared of trees. If a tree removal permit is obtained that is consistent with the Black Diamond Municipal Code and other conditions that may require selective tree retention.
So the condition is specific to areas outside of sensitive areas and their buffers. So this condition is specific to anything that is outside of a sensitive area or its associated buffer. And the condition was a preliminary plat condition that just required the developer to include that on the face of the plat, which they have. So if they were to come in for a tree permit for anything outside of a sensitive area or their buffers to clear trees, they'd be subject to the same code requirements.
All right, I was actually thinking of citizens.
Yep.
So the developer and citizens are subject to the same process to take a tree down?
The developer is vested to the municipal code that was in place at the time of approval for the MPD permit, and the only significant change that I'm aware of or difference is the bond amount for significant trees if they opt to bond for tree replacement, or they're still subject to the one-to-one tree replacement for significant.
These lots don't have any trees on them that a future homeowner would be wanting to cut down.
Yeah.
So all the trees that are in there are either in homeowner associations, protected tracks, wetland tracks, the buffers thereof.
Okay, so you're saying these trees are kind of have a specific identified area that they occupy, and it might be necessary to take one down some reason?
So if we look here at where it starts, as areas outside of sensitive areas and their buffers may be cleared of trees if a tree remover permit is obtained. The trees for the plat and the areas that we are have all been cut and cleared, and this is just a preliminary plat condition.
Yeah. The conditions of 2C as they are right now, there's no significant trees on the lots that would be cleared subject to this condition.
It's moved.
But this condition, though, was specific to the preliminary plat and gets pulled over into the final plat because it was a condition. So the requirement is recognized. However, more than likely it won't apply anywhere within 2C. because it's already cleared.
Okay, so citizens aren't even part of this, they're not even, okay, because they can't go by and say, oh, I don't like the way the tree's leaning, we need to take it down.
Yeah, it would be outside of their property in this plat.
Outside their property.
Okay, and so that would be like a city matter?
Well, if there was a dangerous.
If there's a dangerous or hazardous tree, they'd probably contact their homeowners association, and the homeowners association would then, or the managing company of the homeowners station, however that works, would then contact us, and we'd have to.
Or let it fall and be the natural.
We'd always let them fall with any trees that are cut in the buffer and or wetland are fallen into the wetland and the buffer. We don't remove those trees.
Okay.
So they're natural habitat.
I did read that, yeah, thank you.
Councilmember Pepper?
Page 28 of 31. Could you please talk about no more than 150 residential units, and then 300 units may be allowed on an interim basis? Where visually, looking at where it is now, where do they mean another exit on that same road or another exit somewhere else?
There would have to be another connection point from this plat into another property that they're going to build, maybe up in the upper area they're able to come over and make a connection into there, or they make another connection into another piece of property that they own or purchased or bought. Or, okay. But yes, it's 150. Knowing that we're moving forward with a second connection point, and that's been permitted and we've worked through that, mm-hmm. we could let them go up to 300 in there.
All right, I understood that to be from what I read, but I'm just checking that it didn't have to,
right, but
it had to be on a different way.
But it doesn't necessarily, the second access point also can be a fire emergency entrance point. And off of the Willow, does it change the Willow to Dogwood? It might be Dogwood, right, where it changes there. There is, at the edge of the Vooner, a fire emergency four bollards there to remove those so they could have access there.
I think specific to this condition, this is an MPD permit condition that was approved in 2009, so the original MPD permit. Mm-hmm. So this is referencing the overall development, not specific to 2C, but the overall project.
Has to have at least two.
Exactly.
Two entrances and exits. Right. I mean, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So as Andy mentioned, there is an emergency access to 2C, a secondary, and that's typical of the overall development as well. But just for your reference, this was an MPD permit condition as opposed to 2C.
Okay. And I think I went by one to talk about. Maybe you know which one this is. It was the one about the mines.
Mines are bad, that one?
I don't think it said that.
The coal mine hazard, is that the
one? I think so, but I can't find it right at this second. If somebody else has the number, that'd be nice to know. I thought it was at the top of the page.
Do you remember if it was a preliminary plat condition or MPD condition?
It's a CEPA condition.
What was it? It was an MPD condition?
Dan thinks it's a CEPA.
I think it's MPD because it was for both Lawson Hills and the villages. And the mine hazard thing, we were more concerned up on the village, on Lawson, than we were in the villages. And the villages doesn't have any mine workings in the villages.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, because my question was, I'm not looking at it, so it was something, what I wanted to know because of what it said was, when an owner purchases the property, would they be made aware of this
condition.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Is that part of their mortgage papers or?
Only if they're in a mine hazard area.
Yes.
And there aren't any in this plat. There's none in this plat.
Right.
Good to know. Thank you.
Yep.
So, yeah, they do because I had to get one.
Do you? Do you? Okay.
Awesome.
I have a quick question.
Councilmember Deeney?
So, I know we've had a beaver issue in the city. So I'm assuming that on the property itself, since it's still owned by Oak Point until they're totally done with build out, correct? That they're going to maintain the beaver population or oversee, or is that the HOA that's gonna do that? Who is monitoring the beaver activity out there?
Well, those tracks on the final plat are HOA, will be homeowners association's tracks, is that correct? So then that would become the responsibility of the HOA to do something or not to do something.
I think the overarching regulation is gonna be what the city restricts in terms of activities within wetlands, because those will still obviously apply to the development.
Right.
The maintenance of those sensitive area tracks is gonna be limited to the limited areas where there's wetland trails and petway stations and things of that nature. Everything else would be subject to the sensitive area ordinance, which is typically gonna be pretty much hands-on.
So in our current, we do allow trapping of beavers in our city code, are adopted. But whether the HOA does that or doesn't, that's nothing to, that we have any control over.
Okay.
Or participating.
I'm good.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Entertain a motion to adjourn. I move that we adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.